Leaders in tech are burning out at an absurd rate. Control-Alt-Delete with Lisa Drury is a no-BS conversation with one of the top female executives who spent over 25 years in Silicon Valley. If you're suffering from the always-on, never-good-enough, will-replace-you-today machine called the tech space, this show's for you. Here's Lisa.
Hey, everybody. Here's a question I have for you. Are you checking into work and checking out of life? Now, I didn't come up with this phrase, but our guest today did, and I love it so much I had to start with today. I really want you to think about it as you're listening to us today, because we are going to help you check into life. It doesn't mean you have to check out of work, right? But what I know to be true is that when you are fully engaged in your life, you're better at work too. So if you find yourself checking in at work and checking out of life, this episode's for you. And I want to tell you a little secret. If you're not in that space, but you love or lead someone who is, don't tune out. Because what you're going to find out today from our guest, David Shar, is so much insight and wisdom that I don't care where you are on the planet, what's going on, checking in or fully engaged, there's some gold in here. So David, welcome to Control Alt Delete. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. It is really an honor to be here.
So for those of you, what's behind David right now, he has one of those like motivational things in the back. It says, be fearless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. Okay. So that's just a sneak peek into who we're talking to today. If you have that kind of artwork behind you, we're ready to rock and roll, right? Let me tell you all why David's so awesome. Okay. I'm going to read you the formal bio. David Shar is organizational psychology consultant, speaker, and trainer. And I don't know if a lot of people really understand organizational psychology. So I'm going to ask you about that today, David, because I think there's something really magical about that field. And yeah. Most people think like human resources, you know, and they don't really understand that there are people out there studying organizations and how they can really be high performing. So I want to double click on that, but let me tell you why, what he does. So David helps organizations build burnout proof work cultures where management and employees work collaboratively toward embracing the meaning in their work. That's our little hint. David lives in Baltimore, Maryland with his wife. He has 5 children. And I just met Percy, his 120-pound Bernese Mountain Dog. So adorable. And David describes every day as a wonderful and chaotic circus. I mean, isn't that, like, that's the best description, a wonderful and chaotic circus. Talk about a system in itself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, David, welcome to Control Alt Delete. I'm so glad you're here. And I think I would really like to start with giving people hope, right? We have been through a tremendous 14, 16 months, depending on when you're listening to this episode, right? With everybody talking about this return to normal. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, you know, burst anybody's bubble, but we're not going back to what was normal before. And I'd love to replace that with some hope. So what are you seeing? What are your thoughts on this? What's going on with the clients you're working with?
Yeah, I share that with you. I hope we don't go back to normal, because anybody who's experienced burnout knows. Really, anybody who's experienced organizational work knows that we're far away from perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And so hopefully, you know, I think the past year, everybody has sort of had this chance to pause to some extent and sort of rethink everything. And so I hope that we're not so resilient that we bounce back to exactly the way it was. And instead, we give ourselves grace and really have collaborative discussions between employees and management on where we should go from here. And that's really so much of the work that I'm doing right now, is helping organizations do just that, kind of like, where do we go from here? That's not a management decision. That has to be a collaborative decision.
Yeah. Let me just high five you. I mean, here's what I know. If organizations decide, okay, we're going to put everyone through resilience training, which is a go-to for so many organizations. I just want to raise my hand and say, don't do that first. Please start having the conversations, right? The hope is in the conversation. The hope happens when you bring humanity into work and you start to have conversations about how might we leverage what worked and get rid of what didn't. You know, it's as simple as that. And it's as profound as that. And I'm seeing that too. I'm seeing that the organizations that are willing and open to having those conversations, those are more hope-filled cultures right now. The other cultures where it's management or leadership just dictating down, you know, back in the work, June 16th, back in the workplace. By the way, you're not going back to work, as I say, right? You've been working. This is back to the office, if you will. That's not hope-filled for anybody, right? So I love that you're doing the work that you do. I think it's so important.
Yeah. And yeah. That's so true. I always say we have this super focus on resilience training, and we sort of put everything off to the side. And it's either resilience training, which if that's what you're doing alone without any of the other pieces, then in a big way, it's sort of placing the onus, if not the blame, onto the employees.
Yeah.
Right. That you've got to toughen up, right? We're going to keep doing the same thing, but we're going to teach you how to take it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you go to the other side, which happens often, it's management thinking, okay, we've got to put this in play. We got to put this in play. And then it's putting all the onus and responsibility on management. And I don't think that we get anywhere doing one of those things. I think when we come together and we do resilience training as part of this greater sort of process where we're building in purpose and we're getting rid of those, what I like to call vestigial policies, which are like in biology, there's the vestigial structures, these parts of your body that don't have any purpose anymore, but evolutionarily they did. And we have like these vestigial policies at work, both in the handbook, but also in the culture and our habits, mm-hmm. right? And so if we're not working together to figure out what those are and which vestigial policies are sort of getting in our way of our work being more meaningful and purpose-driven, then I don't think we're going to get very far. And that's why it seems to be a loop that we keep going in where people continually get burned out in specific cultures.
I wish I had like an emoji where I could be like jumping up and down and doing a backflip, because here's what I know. And this is why I wanted to bring you on today for sure, is that I think we're at a crossroads, especially in tech, right? The audience we're talking to today is tech. Tech is the always on, never good enough, where we place you tomorrow culture. That's how we roll in tech, right? And I'm on a mission to change that. And I believe that that starts with bringing humanity into the office, right? And that means telling the truth. So let's just say the organization, you know, at the recruiting level says, listen, here's the reality. We're going to feed you. We're going to wash your clothes. We're going to make sure you sleep here at night comfortably. You're going to miss every birthday party for the next 3 years. You know, you're not going to recognize your spouse in a couple of years, but you're going to make a shit ton of money, right? You in? Like some companies are saying people are most important, you know, you're everything, blah, blah, blah. And yet it's BS by the policies and the procedures they're putting in place. And so I would love to just double click on that with you. That if you're not the CEO, but maybe you're the vice president, heck, maybe you're the first line manager and you know what the truth is, which is that we were going to pay you all this money, feed you and make, you know, 3 years later, look back and you know that you really believe in the product or you believe in what this company is doing for the environment, like, you know, electric cars, let's just say, right? How can you find your purpose and find your boundaries? Like, what advice do you have for people that are stuck in that always on, never good enough kind of system at an organizational level, and yet trying to plug in and kind of hunker down and speak up and not give up their whole life?
Yeah, I think it's about aligning your values, right? And it's about really sort of job crafting. You sort of take the job that you're given and you can work it to the letter, but nobody does that, right? You were in HR. Have you ever heard of hiring somebody who you think is going to stick to the letter of the law with the job description? Of course not.
Yeah.
Everybody in their interview tells you how they're going to go above and beyond and they're go-getter. And if you thought somebody was just going to do the bare minimum, even though that's what you're hiring for, it's not what you're hiring for. You wouldn't hire them. So I think often people start out going above and beyond and trying to job craft and make those connections to something deeper because they want to be significant. They want to find significance in their work. But then they at some point see that the organization isn't going above and beyond. They're sticking to the letter of the law. So if it's transactional on one end, it's very likely going to become transactional on the other end. So but somebody's got to break. And if you are from whatever seat you're in, you're trying to go deeper. It's really about going deeper. Where can you connect? And if there's nothing to connect to in the organization, find a new organization.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like so basic, right? But to some people, it's so what? What? I'm going to just force it? Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah,
no, you're absolutely right. Some people feel handcuffed to the organization anyway. Yeah. Right.
Well, they do that with stock too. Stock is like, well, I'll just hang in for 3 years while my stock vests. And I'm like, that's 3 years of your life.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of the most toxic employees that I've seen are the really tenured employees because oftentimes those are the people who, if it's not a great work environment, those who are the people who would stick around for so long, they're the people that are unable to sort of pull away. They're out of fear or something deep inside them that they're not able to pull away, or they're just part of the toxicity. Like that, this is where they thrive.
Yeah.
And so, when you see a toxic work environment, usually it's the more tenured people who are sort of living that, you know, and then creating it for future generations of workers. But I think that it's really important to know that if the seeds are there, the values are there, and show me an organization that doesn't add value to the world, I'll show you a bankrupt organization, because by definition, they have to be offering some product or service that that somebody feels betters them, right?
Yeah.
And so to align with that, if you begin to align with that and talk about it, other people could start to align with that a little bit more too, and really be focused on it. And one of the things I love to say is that mundane tasks are not necessarily the same as trivial tasks.
Say that again. Mundane tasks
are not necessarily trivial, right?
So not necessarily trivial. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So the mundane tasks of, because this is what I always get asked when I talk about finding meaning in your work. People always ask me immediately about the paperwork and I all this stuff that I have to do. And it's like, okay, that's mundane, but does it get you to the bottom line? Not meaning the bottom line dollar wise, but the bottom line, does it move you closer to your mission? Mm-hmm. And by your mission, I mean the collective your, the organizational mission, but I also mean your personal mission, which I think that everybody should have some sort of idea, or at least an open-mindedness to some sort of idea of what's this all about for me. And by what's this all about, I mean way deeper than work, but definitely work is a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. You just said so much here. I think I could do 3 days on this. So I want to go back because this is so important. So, you know, as a leader in the organization, and you're in this always on, never good enough, we'll replace you tomorrow. That's already fear and anxiety. Your amygdala is already hijacked. Your prefrontal cortex is shut down. You're already in stress, right? And what I've been working on and learning about stress through like Kelly McGonigal is about, you know, sometimes stress means you care, which I think a lot of people do, right? And then also sometimes stress can get you to rise to the occasion, like an Olympic champion at that, you know, finish line or whatever. And what you're saying between mundane and not trivial, so many times leaders are like, get this report done. I need this for the QBR. You know, we need to do an MRM with our tech internal team and our customers, right? And all these front line, I'll call, right, the engineers and, you know, the sales teams and the R&D groups that are just trying to keep the product going, right, and keep the customer happy. You're like, I don't have time for this crap. But what I'm hearing you say, and I think is so relevant, is that the leader, if they can put the why into the request, that you can take a mundane and keep it out of trivial. In other words, you rolling up this data is so important because it's going to affect, you know, the earnings release, or you rolling up this data for a customer is really important so we can actually figure out how to support them better and get less work on your plate. Like having the leader tie the why to the request or the expectation, because engineers hate tracking time and they don't want to fill out another CRM system, right? And they're just like, oh, I got bigger things to do. And yet the leaders are like, I have to have this data. So there's a gap already, right? So I think everyone listening in, what David just said is beautiful to remember. Make sure you tell them the because. I need this report because. That takes it out of trivial, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Am I hearing you right?
Well, as you move up the chain, you know, that org chart, typically you are getting a wider and wider view, you know, whereas if you are frontline, you are sort of like right in it. And it's like being so close to the painting that all you see is that smearing of pink, and you have no idea what the painting actually is. And so if we're not helping, like helping people see the broader picture, they're not going to necessarily see it. And it can be lost to them. And what did you talk about in that initial interview with them when you were telling them about the organization? Did you tell them about, oh, the paperwork? Like, you weren't talking about the mundane tasks. You were talking about the vision of the organization in the interview, right? And so then they get in and they lose sight of that because they're this small piece of it, but that they're also an essential piece of it, or you're wasting your money as a manager. And so just help them see what the end goal of this work is. And people oftentimes won't ask you. You've got to volunteer that information.
Yeah, it sounds, I would use the word intentional. You have to be intentional with it, right? Yeah, volunteer it. So I think this goes right into my fabulous love of organizational psychology. I mean, can you just help people understand, because what you just described is part of the work that you do, right? It's taking a look at the larger system and then the pieces in between. So for a leader listening in, who's like, organizational psychology, what does that have to do with me getting my job done or bringing purpose to the world or not burning out? You know, just give us a little bit of insight here. Cause I think it's a game changer when people understand there is a practice here. There is a discipline here that can really add value to your organization.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So IO psychology, industrial organizational psychology, has a real PR issue just by its name alone, too many syllables. And it's really what it is bringing the data and the science, the psychological science, the social science to HR and to the people at work, right? We don't have to reinvent the wheel every time there's a new issue within the workplace, because the studies have been done and the research is there, and we're continuously researching on things like change management and employee selection methods and training and development. And we're really constantly looking at these things and burnout, what causes burnout and what's engagement. Is it actually a thing? Because you see every engagement survey asks completely different questions. And it's like, is having a best friend at work really engagement? Like, I don't know, maybe, right? But to ask the questions, but to ask the questions as a scientist, I was having a conversation with another consultant, and this individual was saying, well, you know, if you want to measure whatever it is, you know, employee engagement, it doesn't matter what the research calls it, it's what it is to that organization. But if that organization is just making up terms, then what's the meaning behind those terms, right? It's very much like the difference between when somebody's feeling down and they say, yeah, I'm depressed, or I'm feeling depressed, versus when an actual psychologist says to you are suffering from depression. Those are two different things, even though we're using the same word.
Yeah.
So that's what it does. It brings the scientific method to work and understanding the people at work and how we can, you know, my soft spot is motivation of every kind, from burnout to meaningfulness to work as a calling, but to really understand how people tick and what boxes work checks off for people.
Thank you for this, because for those of you listening, and the reason I asked this question is, you know, this audience is filled with brilliant PhD minds, right? I mean, these they're changing the world with technology. And I think what gets overlooked is the science and the art of the work that you do, because the lens that you use when you help brilliant minds like this actually helps them be better, right? Because when you're rewarded and recognized for being technically brilliant, you stay in that lane, right? You go up the career ladder. Sometimes you manage people, sometimes you don't. When you decide to manage people, there's a whole new thing you got to learn, which is people, right? Not just the tech side and the coding. And then at some point when you're going to run an organization, you got to figure out the systems at play and the words that are being used, and really look at culture and really look at high performance and what that means. And I just think that the work that organizational psychology focused consultants do is just, it's critical and so many times overlooked.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the reasons why I wanted you here. I mean, one of the things you and I were talking about before we got on, we were talking about, you know, this extreme that we people get in as leaders, right? Whether we know it's all kumbaya or it's all work, no play. And I know that you have some feelings on this, you know, through your experience as well. If we had a world where we had no conflict and no stress at work, would we get anything done? Like, what's your view on this?
Yeah, so this is a great question, because I think this is where people go. Like, they're looking for the perfect organization. So let's get rid of conflict and conflict is so often misunderstood, and so is stress, because clearly high levels of conflict, high levels of stress have really bad consequences, right? For the organization, for the individual at work, for the individual outside of work. Really, really substantial consequences. However, if you have an organization that doesn't have any conflict, you're looking at an organization where people don't care enough to sort of debate maybe lively about the way things are done or what direction we should go in. And what we see is that organizations that don't have sort of like this process conflict, this substantive conflict, what we find is that they are less creative and they are less effective. And you see all these negative things start to come out. If there's relationship conflict, that's an issue. You know, this effective conflict where we just really clash and don't get along and we make it personal. That's bad. Yes, we all agree that's bad for organizations. But this substantive conflict, having conflict about the process, about the task, and being able to fight it out without it becoming personal is really essential for an organization to grow, especially in such a VUCA world, you know, this volatile, ever-changing environment. So one of the catches here, by the way, is that when we see substantive conflict rising, we see effective conflict rising too. So as people get in more conflict about things, it's hard to not make it personal. But that's why it takes constant management. And the most desirable things within an organization are sometimes the hardest. And this is where management earns their paycheck, right? I mean, to help guide people and help create scenarios and create an environment where the right things are where they're motivating people toward the right path and sort of steering them away from things like effective conflict. And the same thing with stress. You want a certain amount to energize you to help get things done. I have horrible ADHD. Without stress, nothing gets done. Like, as soon as something gets stressful, then I get it done. But until then, nothing gets done. So everything needs some moderation to it. The extremes, like you said, are never healthy.
Well, what you said here, I'm having a moment of allergy. So if anyone's watching or listening, I have one eye, I'm crying.
I thought it was getting to you.
You were totally getting to me. But here's the thing. When you're raised as someone, you know, conflict at home, conflict is bad. And then you go into leadership and you're like, conflict is bad. We'll just do what we need to. I think it leads to burnout. I mean, I'm just going to highlight this for a second. So many leaders don't want conflict. And what you're saying is, flip that around and let's embrace conflict as a sign that we care and that we have an opportunity to do things, right? When you think about COVID, you know, in 72 hours, talk about conflict and stress, everybody work from home. If you don't have a laptop or a desk-based computer, we're going to figure it out. Everybody shift, talk about conflict and competing priorities, but they figured it out. So when I think about, you know, marketing doesn't understand what the sales team needs and, you know, the IT team doesn't give me more Amazon web space when I need it. And facilities doesn't, you know, they're making these crazy ass decisions on where we're going to put people. I mean, all that in my mind, I think is actually an opportunity if you don't take it personally. So in the examples I'm giving, what I want to pull through what you're saying, it's always, that's like a blame, you know, a departmental blame or a functional blame. And what I know is when conflict arises, you can blame the problem and not the people. And that's when the magic happens. You know, that's when it's like, even at home, if the trash isn't taken out, instead of you didn't take the trash out, I've learned to say, oh, the trash is overflowing. What are we going to do about it? And then one of us says, I'll take it. Right. I mean, you can do this at home too. So What are some tips you have for people when this conflict is arising? How do you help your organizations that you work with kind of get into it and embrace it in a way that they can actually do something with it rather than it just keeping them in silos?
Right. So first you have to teach conflict, right? Because people have these misconceptions about conflict. So you have to understand where people are and help them understand the research on conflict and what conflict does do. So I was recently working with an organization where person after person interviewing them, and these are people working currently within the organization, and every one of them, I got two specific answers from them in the length of this interview that everybody said the same thing. Everybody described their work environment as a family, right? It feels like family.
Uh-huh.
And everybody told me that there's no stress, no conflict. And I was left scratching my head and wondering how messed up my family is, because I've never heard of a family without any conflict.
Right?
But at home, I can have conflict because my kid doesn't think that because I'm upset with her about X, Y, or Z, that I'm going to lock her out of the house tomorrow and it's over, right? Mm-hmm, my wife doesn't think I'm going to leave her because I was upset that she left the kitchen door open and the dog got all the food.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So there's this safety, this trust that has to come first before healthy conflict can sort of take hold. And it's actually cyclical, because the more healthy conflict you have, the more you know you can trust people, the more trust you have, the more you can have this healthy conflict. But I think it really needs to come down to, is this organization, are we different factions within one just sort of conglomerate, or are we all pursuing the same thing? We all want to impact the world in the same way. And whereas, you know, marketing may be the arm, you know, finance is the leg, right? And we're all doing the same thing. It's like the beginning to a horrible joke. But I actually, one week of my life, I decided I was going to sit down. I sat down with a rabbi, an imam, a Catholic priest, and a pastor, and all separately. I didn't know what would happen if I got them all in the room. But I asked each one, what's like a meaningful life? Right. And because I know the science, the psychology behind meaningfulness, but I wanted to know from, these religious minds, what is meaning in their theology? Mm-hmm. And across the board, there's this idea that people come together, diverse people, everybody has their own sort of gifts, their own missions, and they complement each other. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to come together in ways that we complement each other and can then go out and conquer the world and bring on whatever that religion wants to bring on. But within the workplace, that's what they're describing to me. They're describing work. These people are coming in diverse groups of people, not just talking about like surface level diversity, but like this real deep level diversity where people think differently and process differently and have different skills, and they come together like doing their part to move forward. And when we're doing that and we can sort of fight over things and the process and let the best ideas win, because we're moving together and we all have the same interests, that's where conflict really works.
Yeah. Excuse my allergies. Here's when you say the different religions, I mean, it does describe work, right? If you look at each of the functions, that can be their own religion, right? We believe this is the most important thing. We believe this is what I'm hearing you say. And I think is so important is, I guess this is a challenge for anyone listening right now. You know, who are you having conflict with? What function, what department, what person? Really taking a look at, why are they so focused on what they care about? And can you figure out a way where you guys can align, right? Really the challenge is not to see them as the enemy, if you will, but to really think, oh, they care deeply too. You know, how might we, whatever you're trying to solve? I mean, curious, do you have a go-to question or phrase when you're helping teams come together and see each other's point of view? What is a way you help them?
I love taking the opportunity to ask people from one team what they think are the motivations, or to describe to me the motivations or what the other group wants, right? Because chances are they never thought of it outside of this two-dimensional kind of thing. And that's really where it begins, understanding, you know, I love to say, like, everybody wakes up every morning, you know, they're the hero of their own story, and they want to go and do good. Nobody wakes up in the morning, they're like, how much have, okay, not nobody, but yeah. Most people don't. Hopefully nobody in your organization wakes up in the morning and like, what havoc can I bring out? Right. And so people are generally motivated by specific things, and to understand their motivations, instead of in negotiation, you talk about position versus interest, right? We take a very specific position and we say, no, I want that piece of pizza. No, I want that piece of pizza. And then it turns out that one of my kids eats the crust and the other likes the cheese. And so, okay, everybody can have the pizza, but they're not recognizing that. They just both know that they want the piece of pizza.
Right.
So it's about getting beyond the position and really getting to the interest at heart with the person. And then if we have that trust, and we're able to sort of empathize and start thinking like the other person and really sort of putting ourselves in their shoes, then we can start to open up dialogue and try to find the best answer, which is not necessarily my answer.
Yeah, man, that's deep. I mean, I hope everybody's taking some notes, because what you're talking about is it's a shift in how you show up, right? You're talking about being curious, staying curious, even when you're triggered or pissed off and thinking the other guy's a jerk or whatever. It's being curious. You know, a lot of times in HR, we used to call it the reasonable person standard, right? When you were trying to talk about lawsuits or whatever, you know, when would a reasonable person say or do this, right? But I used to hate that in HR, but I absolutely love it in consulting, because it really, it implies, when I say, when would a reasonable person prioritize this over that, they go, oh, you mean they could be reasonable? Wait a minute. You know, I just thought they were an a-hole, right? Like, no. They might have a reason too. So helping people to stay curious is what I'm hearing you say, and being curious about what might motivate that other person, because it might not be what motivates you.
Right.
You know? And so when we talk about, are you clocking into work and clocking out of life? You know, for me, when I heard that, it really was like a sucker punch, because so many times when I was on the road to burnout, and when I did burnout, I was absolutely clocking into work and I completely clocked out of life. So I was like, where were you when I was burning out, David Sharp? Right. And yet I know so many people need to hear that right now, because I know, and we talk about burnout all the time on this show, but, you know, cynicism, exhaustion, you know, no sense of fulfillment anymore. Nothing makes you happy that used to. So if you think about all that and you're thinking everyone else is against you and this conflict is happening, it's almost like, what's the first step to even help yourself, right? Because you got this whole oxygen mask thing. You got to help yourself first to be able to see it bigger. So can you talk about clocking into life and having that be work too, versus just clocking into work? You know, what tips and advice do you have for people? Because I think this is, I think we're in a crisis right now when it comes to this.
Yeah, especially now that we're always clocked into work, right?
Exactly, right.
And there's no boundaries. And so it's really, you hear about people working longer hours than ever and transitioning back from one to the next. And we already know that multitasking is a myth, right? Multitasking doesn't happen. Your brain is actually switching, hyper switching between two things. And there's a lot lost in that process. When we're at home and, you know, within tech, I imagine a lot of people that are listening to this may have already been sort of working on virtual teams. And if that's the case, hopefully those teams were sort of established in a smart and thorough way, where boundaries were sort of built in. But certainly when 2020 hit and the rest of us went toward virtual, there was no time for that. And so the organization didn't come up with any boundaries, and you didn't have time to figure out the boundaries. You didn't have time to discuss it with your spouse, your roommate, your whatever. You didn't have time to do that. And so everything sort of got mushed together and started cannibalizing each other. If we think of ourselves as separate people, where I'm one individual at home and one individual at work, that gets really chaotic and really damaging. But if we understand that I am one person, and You know, I could say one time in my life, and I've interviewed a lot of people, a lot of job applicants throughout my career, and one applicant came and he had his own core values. He asked me if I wanted to hear his core values. And I'm like, your core values? Or you mean you want to know our core values? No, did you want to hear my core values? And I thought it was so amazing that this person had it and then also had the confidence to offer it, and that I would understand him so much deeper just by him telling me what these are. I think it's really important to get in touch with our core values and understand what it is that lights our fire, like what it is that we're passionate about, what it is, where it is that we feel like we can impact the world. And I think it needs to start there. And that should be so much a part of your job search from the very beginning. Not to say, you know, millennials, which now just means the youngest people at work, you know, right, millennials are like those rascals, right?
Yeah.
it's like the kids on my lawn. But people would argue that these younger workers, they're looking for the perfect opportunity and they want their job to be everything and they won't accept anything less. And I don't think that that's the right solution, to not accept anything. But if you know what you're about and you know what you're looking for, then you can find it within almost any situation. We were talking beforehand about my poop story. I was working at a kennel. I thought I was going to be pre-veterinary. You know, I thought I was going to be a vet. And so I was working in kennels. And I remember this was one of my very first work experiences where I'm standing in the kennel and I'm pooper scooping, right? Literally picking up poop. And I'm standing close to this coworker of mine and she's doing the same thing. And I looked at her and saw her face, and in that moment realized we weren't doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I'm picking up poop, but am I really? No, I'm here because I'm on this mission to help these dogs feel better and give them a cleaner environment. And this is part of my mission of continuing to grow into that role of vet so I can care for animals more and more. And so it was a completely different job. And that's why I think it needs to start, you know, before you ever even go for the job interview in the most ideal situation. Mm-hmm. But it's not so that I can find that perfect job for me, but so that I can find the job that I can find the perfectness in, or find that opportunity in that I can sort of be me and not have to put my life on pause. That the things that are important to me are also the things that are important to my organization, the things that we do day in and day out. How do we help people, society, et cetera?
Yeah, first of all, you had me at poop. You know what I mean? Everybody, I'm sure everyone was like, wait, did he just say poop? And I think everybody has their poop story. Honestly, right? When I think of mine, I had one too. It wasn't poop, but I had a situation where I was working for an insurance company and we were taught to prevent claims from being processed. We used to call ourselves, you know, off the record, processing prevention team, right? Even though you would never say that, right? Our job was to make sure that you fought for your claim. And that was a core value conflict for me. And I saw other people there that were just checking in for the clock, doing what they were told, almost like checking out of the job. I mean, these people were filing insurance claims because they needed help. And I'm supposed to send it back 3 times and then maybe you'll get a yes on the fourth. Like it made my stomach hurt. I would get migraines. Like, talk about a core value conflict, right? And I never thought about it like that until your poop story about, oh yeah, that's when I went into HR because I wanted to make sure policies and procedures and people, right, were factored into the equation, that it wasn't just, I don't know, a factory of prevention. Like, why do you have an insurance policy if you're not supposed to use it? It's a whole thing, right? I have my own soapbox. But more recently, David, I'll share this story and I'd love for your perspective on it, right? Because this is something that when I did eventually take the medical leave for burnout and the doctor told me, welcome to Silicon Valley. This is the number one reason I see people. And I was like, what? I thought I was broken. Yeah, no, right? So I went on a process to figure out my core desired feelings. And you will recall, I said, how do you want to feel when our interview's over? Yeah. I asked everybody this question. Because if you know how you want to feel, you're going to, similar to values, you're going to make decisions to feel that way, right? So I wrote down my list. I was all proud. And I went to my colleague and I was like, hey, I came up with my core desired feelings. So when I go back to work, this is how I want to feel, right? And it was like connected, ease, healthy, boundaried, you know, respected, embraced, like all these different feelings. And then we chopped them all down. And she's like, I don't see that happening in your job. Like, let's just get really clear. And I wanted to punch her. I'm like, no, 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 but I've identified them. It will happen.
Right.
You know, I will them just because I know them. And what I realized, and I think to your point, I had to change in order to feel that way. When I went back to work, guess what I had to do? Time block my calendar so I didn't have back-to-back meetings. Ask for my team to walk with me on our one-on-ones, even if it's on the phone. Pack my lunch, you know, meal prep for the week. Say no to say yes. You know, I had to do the work. And instead of like blaming the organization, like it's this, you know, it was all their fault. It was like, oh, hell no. If I want to feel this way, I have to do something about that. And then they can meet me or not. And then I can decide. So when you're talking about values, and let's say someone's listening right now and going like, yeah, I value sleep, or I value, you know, mutual respect and a place where I can say my opinion, and they don't feel like they have that. I guess what I'm asking you is, I think there's like a personal journey here too, because you can't just say to the culture, go change yourself. Like, you can change culture through people.
Right.
And I'm not even sure what my question is, because I'm really just processing real time with you. So what thoughts do you have? How's that for a question?
Yeah. So I think that's genius what you said, and especially that one example of what if I value mutually respectful relationships, right? But I would say that value is external to you, maybe a little too external to you. It's putting expectations on others instead of owning it and saying, who can I be? How do I live, right? So my father's just about to retire, actually, from a long career in law. And he was a medical malpractice lawyer. So a lot of people, they hear medical malpractice lawyer and they think ambulance chaser, right?
Yeah.
He has so many experiences throughout his career where he's working side by side with lawyers who didn't even talk to their patient. There was one patient they didn't even know. She had a brain tumor and it wasn't good, and she couldn't really easily communicate. And he meets with her lawyers who are sort of passing him the case, and he starts talking to her. And as a teenager, she used to be like the star of her cheerleading team, right? The head cheerleader. And now she's like a vegetable. She can't communicate, or so they think. And he starts talking to her, asking her, Ashley, what do you think about all this? And all the other lawyers jump up and they say, no, she can't talk. She can't understand you. And her mom said, what are you talking about? Yes, she can. And it turns out that she had this computer thing hooked up where she could type and she could communicate through that. This is back in the days of AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah.
They became AIM buddies, my father and her and this new client, where the old lawyers never even knew that there was a person in there. They didn't see her as a person in there. So he's in an environment where there's a lot of stereotypical types of behaviors, you know, and people think they know what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't for him. He decided he was going to be different and he was going to do it his way. And it was going to be about his values, helping people who were wrong. And so he did that and nobody could tell him not to. And that's really was the secret to his success, that he was doing it his way. If you're in a place where everybody is, you know, you value kindness and everybody's kind, that's too easy. Really,
right.
When we're thinking about a mission, that's
right.
Easy. What about being in a place where it's not like that? And you are the one who is spreading the kindness and you see it begin to spread because other people will mirror your actions, right? I forget who I saw say this, but they asked the question, they said, would you have to decide, would you rather be the thermometer or the thermostat, right? The thermometer reads the temperature in the room and reacts to it, right? The thermostat, however, that's the thing that sets the temperature.
Yeah.
Right? They rise above it and they're the ones who set the temperature. And I think that's what people need to decide, that I'm going to own these core values. Can I do it here? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, look elsewhere. You know, in tech, you guys have no problem looking elsewhere. I think a lot of my brother-in-law is in tech and he recently asked me, is it still like expected for people to give 2 weeks notice or not? And I said, generally, yes. I don't know about in tech.
Right. Yeah.
So because there's so much job jumping, if you'll jump jobs for a higher salary or more growth opportunity, then certainly if you don't feel that you can be your best self within this work environment, then that's a good reason to look elsewhere. But you really have to ask yourself, is it that it's not easy for me here, or is it that I can't do it here?
Mm-hmm. This is gold. Yeah, because what we're really saying through both of our examples here is that it starts with you, right? And you talked about external versus internal. Mm-hmm. And boy, what a wake up call it was for me when my colleague was like, you can't have that. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you know, yes. And then I had to really get clear on that because yeah, some of it was externally focused and excuse me, for so many people, it's about the money. Mm-hmm. And if you get up every day for the money, let me tell you something, you are on a path to burnout. If it's just about the money, oh, the RSUs and, you know, the vesting and we might go public and all this, if then or what, like, cause every day of your life is that one day that you have. And I, you know, this is when I can sound woo woo and on a soapbox. Right. But I firmly believe we are not here just to make money. You weren't born just to make money. I think money comes when you're clear on what you want to do and why you want to do it. So like, what brings you joy and lights you up and energizes you and why you do that, right? I mean, the reason I love tech so much is all the innovation and all the good stuff. Yes, listen, there's all kinds of stuff you can talk about, all the crap too, but there are some amazing things happening that are helping people live healthier lives, helping climate change. Like, that's amazing to me, right? And so really aligning with your own values and who you are. And I love so much what you said. Don't expect it to be easy. No one said it's going to be easy. Like, if it's easy, you might want to look around and go, what am I missing? Like, right? Like, there's in the flow, right? But every day always easy. That's probably, I guess I would call it cheap easy versus, you know, real meaningful easy, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Meaningfulness by its very definition is about this stress, like this strain, right? So one line of research describes meaningfulness, like a meaningful life, psychologically as being the strain between the self and others, right? Oh. So when I'm all about myself, life isn't meaningful. And I think we could all pretty much agree with that. But also we all know these people who are always giving, and they don't seem so fulfilled either. It's the strain between the two. And the other dynamic is being versus doing, right? That you have to give yourself time to just think and meditate and be with your thoughts, but you also need to be doing. And if you're not, if it's not a constant tug between those two, then you're going to be out of balance. So life itself is supposed to be difficult. I always tell my kids, if life is easy, figure out what you're doing wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Then you're not setting the bar high enough.
Yeah.
The thing that you said about money, I think is dead on. You know, my favorite coaching technique is the five whys.
I love the five whys so much. Yeah.
It's great. When somebody says that their primary motivation is money, and people at home could do this to themselves. If that's what your primary motivation is, or something similar, that's sort of surface level, ask yourself why, and just keep asking yourself why until you get to that core value that you hold that you may not understand right off the bat. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like role playing real quick? Can we do that?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you want me to ask you why, or you want to ask me why? Cause I think this will really help people. This, listen in everybody. We're about to do this. Cause this is really gold.
Yeah.
Do you want me to ask you, or you want to ask me?
I'll ask you. What is your why?
Okay. So we're going to do the money one, right? As an example.
Yeah.
Right. So I get up every day and go to work because, I want financial freedom.
So what is it about financial freedom? Why do you want financial freedom?
Because I grew up and without that, and I saw how hard it was on my parents and my family, and I don't ever want to wonder where my next meal's coming from or if we'll have a roof over our head.
So it's about the security then, is that right?
You know, I didn't think about it that way. I just wanted money so that I would. Yeah. I wanted to feel safe. Yeah. Security. Okay. I can go with that.
It didn't even take us five.
Right.
But so that sense of security is really interesting. And then why is a sense of security so important? And how else could we, what are the trade-offs for that too? Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I stay, so I'm in tech and I have these RSUs in 3 years, and boy, three more years I'm in, right? And all this money's coming my way and I got no worries in the world, and you know, but I'm not seeing my family and I take on more every day and they won't give me any more headcount. And I, you know, I have a big title and my parents are proud, and you know, what advice, how can I just sit here for 3 years and just cash in, you know?
Right.
That's what I'm doing. That's for me.
Yeah. So find the rest, find what else there is, because it doesn't have to be, you know, I always jump to people's motivations. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes naturally to me and also through my training. There's always the motivations. What are the motivations? And what I find interesting is we very often, when we're thinking of others for sure, and even when we're thinking about ourselves, we think it's got to be one thing.
And right. Yes.
So complex what motivates us. So, okay, you can be motivated by the money, but does that mean that you have to push pause because of this experience in the future? What else can you get out of this at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And what else is important for you? What is going to be at the end of that rainbow that you can't start building now?
I love it. Yeah, because you're basically pulling in the future to today and then having you still look at what's necessary, right? Because for some people, then I'll just take my family on the business trips, or I'll plan my vacations ahead of time. You know, there's ways you can do it rather than hamster wheel, because that 3 years is everything. And my family's all in and my kids won't be out of the house yet. For others, they wake up and go, wait a minute, my kids will be in college then and I'm going to miss out. So I got to figure out another way to get to that 3 years, not the way I'm doing it now. You can still get to the 3 years, but you got to be really clear on the why so that you can be creative with getting there. Is that what you're saying too?
Right. Yeah. And where can you set up those boundaries, right?
Yes.
In a smart way, kind of compartmentalized. And I think people are, they get a little weird about setting up boundaries, like specific time blocks on their calendars for family time and things like that, because it makes it feel less romantic or less, you know.
Right. It's not so spontaneous and just free flowing, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And very early on in my marriage, I realized like, no, we had to schedule date night. Like we had to, and it was something that we didn't budge because it was incredibly important. But that way I could be incredibly driven and push forward. But also this was a priority because it was on my calendar where the rest of my priorities are. If family time isn't on your calendar and all your other priorities are, I think you have to ask yourself, is family truly a priority? And if so, why am I not treating it like my other priorities that I time block for, that I make sure, you know, get put in there? And oftentimes it's because back to family is forgiving, right? So they'll
family is forgiving until they're not, right?
Yeah. Or, right. And until
I love this example. Yeah. This is a great example. So for those of you that are checking into work and checking in out of life, simply just looking at your calendar and seeing what are you prioritizing. Talk about a wake-up call, right? To David's point. And one of the things I do in my family is we do popsicle time. So every day at 3 o'clock, I check out of work and I do an hour with my daughter. And we did that when the pandemic started because we didn't have the you know, it just all blurred together. And she's like, you're all working. And I'm like, you're always in my office. And we had this like thing. Right. So now we have popsicle time. And I thought it would last like a week. It's been a year. And to the point where if clients call me now, hey, do you have time at 3 o'clock? I'm like, popsicle time. And I don't even feel guilty anymore. In the beginning, I didn't want to tell anybody. What if they judge me, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like a badge of honor. Like it's pop. And my daughter will walk in. If you're my 2 o'clock call, come 3 o'clock. She's standing here and she gets on and she's like, and they're like, oh, it's popsicle time. Like she keeps me accountable. Love and what's beautiful about it is there were times I'd sneak on my phone. Right. And she's like, ah, popsicle time. And I'm like, oh, right. So I would say, who can you find for accountability too for that dedicated time? Maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's your kid, maybe it's your colleague, but to block something for yourself that's important besides work is one way to check into life. Right.
And if you're a leader, it's more important than anything, because if you're not doing it as a leader, your people won't do it.
Yeah.
And you might selfishly think you don't want your people doing it. You do.
You do.
To remain being your top people, to remain being your top people for any amount of time and not burn out and not get, not leave or just become much less valuable at work because they're just over it.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to model that behavior.
Yeah. And I'll say one last thing about that. So, you know, all these like recharge days right now in tech, we have these recharge days and that's catch up day for everybody. They're not going to the beach or getting a nap in. It's literally like, oh, I can catch up all week or catch up from the week. So if you're a leader and you're seeing people working on recharge days, I challenge you to change that because that is a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. Resentment and burnout, like on overload, if that's what's going on. And if you're working on recharge days, stop, as Bob Newhart would say, stop it. Stop it. Right? Figure out, even if you're doing part-time, that's better than the full day. Start to figure out how to really model what a recharge day is intended for, and then they'll start to do it too. But if you're working, they're going to be working.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Oh my gosh, David, we have gone everywhere. Like we've talked about poop, people, right? Turning it into your why. We've talked about burnout and values, organizational systems. We've talked about meaning. We've talked about the different ways that you can look at how to plug into life right now and not just have it be work. We could talk for days. So what I want to say to everybody is, you know, play this again, rewind it, really listen. Are you the thermostat or the thermometer, right? What part are you owning for yourself as far as stepping into what you really want and not just having it externally? I mean, David, this has been so helpful to me. I know for those listening, there's going to be some nuggets. One question I always ask before we wrap up is when you think about energy, right? You think about how fast everybody's going. I know that music can be an amazing tool that gets overlooked at times. It's actually a symbol to me when I'm too stressed out because I don't have music on. So what's your go-to song to raise your energy or your vibe when you're just feeling all the stress and chaos going on?
So my wife makes fun of me about the fact that when we go running, my playlist is just like show tunes. And I don't know
that's
why.
Awesome.
I don't listen to that, but for whatever reason, that pumps me up sometimes. But A Million Dreams from The Greatest Showman.
Oh.
That song gets me every time. I think it just speaks so much to that concept of what's your why and how easy it is to lose it along the way and how important it is for your why to get you there, but for you to stay on track and not get sidetracked by other distractions.
Oh my gosh. I was leaking earlier from allergies, but I'm about to cry. That song. Thank you for bringing that song to this playlist because this isn't just like, you know, a feel good song to move your body. This is a feel good song for your soul. You're talking about something that gets you really clear, really fast. Again, it's almost like recalibrating back into what matters. Thank you for that song.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, woo. Okay. So listen, people, you want to follow David. Okay. You want to know where he's at. His website is illuminatepmc.com and he's David at illuminatepmc.com. And listen, you can go Google and watch plenty of videos too. I mean, he's just amazing. And how lucky are we to have you here today? Thank you.
This was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, I'm so glad. Any last words, any parting advice, tips, guidance? How would you like to end this session today?
Yeah, I think we've all rethought what work is to us and we've rethought our lives and what it means to us. And maybe a lot of us are really confused right now. I think this is the moment that you don't want to forget. You want to take a quick snapshot and make sure you don't bounce all the way back to the way things were. Figure out what you want to take from this. And if you're in leadership, you should be having these conversations with your employees. Where do we want to go from here? It would be when a tragedy comes along, it's so easy to just sort of push it away and only see the negative in it. And believe me, you know, this, I agree 100% that there was a lot of negative in the past year, but for us to walk away from it without taking anything from it would only make it worse. You know, we really need to take something away from this. So we've got to decide now what that is, maybe write it down and commit to it.
Mm. Well, I'm going to say one of the gifts is getting to know you, my friend. Thank you for this. Yeah. Having this last year and launching this podcast and bringing people on to have tough conversations that are needed is a huge gift. And I'm just grateful for your time today. And I look forward to supporting your mission and your work that you do out in the world. And everybody, just take it easy on yourselves today, right? And then just give yourself give yourself 10 minutes of sunshine if you can. Take a deep breath, maybe three, you know, and if you know what your values are, awesome. And if you don't, I think that's a great place to start today. Yeah. Yeah. That's how we find our gifts, right, David? Yeah.
This is great. Thank you, Lisa. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. All righty. We'll talk soon.
That was great content, but let's be honest. If you don't get the support you need and start making changes in your life and work as a leader in tech, you can expect regret and burnout in the near future. Lisa can help you get kick-ass results at work without burning out, so you can be present for the moments that matter to you and your loved ones. Take your first step at rebootwithlisa.com.